to And That's With my colleague and friend Judy Dempsey, the editor-in-chief of Strategic Europe. All these issues are discussed in Strategic Europe. You sign up and you get the email, and what's inside is are the many voices of the EU and of NATO, our allies in three wars, variously. Judy has asked the question of her colleagues, should NATO coordinate military support for Ukraine? That word coordinate is very clever. I'm going to avoid it and say the answers are various, but overwhelmingly, yes. Yes, how, Judy? How did you hear the yes?
The yes was actually, it was quite, so many of the respondents said yes, but the United States won't allow it. The United States won't allow it because the aid, without getting into the gritty details, the nitty-gritty details, the aid is coordinated from the US military base in Ramstein, Germany, and there's hugely much lateral. The Japanese are there, the Koreans are there, and other countries are there, about 50 countries, and the Americans want to keep a handle on this. The problem is that it doesn't matter who comes into the White House after the November elections. But the issue is, should the Europeans and NATO per se be doing the coordinating? And actually, all the respondents said yes, but many of the respondents hinted that the United States will not allow this, which is a great shame, because actually it weakens the legitimacy of NATO's role, NATO per se, and in Ukraine.
Dominik Jankowski.
Yeah.
Deputy Permanent Representative of Poland and NATO. I like him. He's very clear. There's no ambiguity in his response. He gives three reasons why, yes, NATO should do more for Ukraine, for three reasons. NATO's a powerhouse. Mm-hmm. Also, taking over from the U.S.-led initiative is WISE, Security Assistance mm-hmm. Group. And third, the one I like, demand signal from Ukraine. We have headlines in London. You see them, Judy, in Berlin. They're out of ammo. They're out of time. They don't have enough trucks to evacuate the wounded. And the U.S. Congress is no more, well, I don't know where they are. I'm not even going to try to summarize. If they're waiting for the cavalry from the U.S., it's not coming within the next month. So Germany can see this. All your colleagues can see this. Poland can see this. Are they going to wait, Judy, or are they going to get involved in Ukraine before it crumbles?
I think they would like to get involved more, but NATO is run by the United States. And the United States called the shots there. What we need is a strong European caucus in NATO, or maybe even better, since the United States won't let NATO take this coordination role, have coalitions of the willing and just do it independently of the United States. And frankly, the Europeans have so many armored trucks and ambulance vehicles, and they can import the shells that are needed. It demands a political will and a leadership. And France has tried to take this leadership on. Germany is not doing the leadership that is necessary for Ukraine. Not only, it's not just about winning the war. It's just helping the suffering and the wounded and bringing them home. But it's just not out there. And this is the time now for coalitions of the willing of European countries to just go and do it.
Leadership. NATO. Right now, the Secretary General has been extended until the July meeting in Washington of the next NATO summit. The agreed-upon nominee for most of the NATO nations is the Prime Minister of Denmark. Well, I believe he's the longest-serving government leader in Europe. I might have that wrong, Mr. Rutte. However,
Netherlands,
thank you. I always confuse those two states. Yeah. Thank you, Judy. Beg pardon, Netherlands. And we come now to dissent in NATO. I read that Hungary, Slovakia, Romania, and Turkey have not acceded to Mr. Rutte's ascension, that there is an alternative in Ionis of Romania, which satisfies one essay you wrote, I think it was last year or the year before, that the Eastern Wing needs more attention from NATO. Would that be a wise move? Because Romania is on the front line, like Poland is.
Romania is indeed on the front line. I can understand why Romania would like a candidate of its own choice from that part of Europe. Slovakia, it's going through a very difficult phase at the moment, given this very nationalist government now in power. Turkey will always have an argument with anybody who's secretary general in some ways. But I think it's actually time to get a country from Central Europe or Eastern Europe or Romania, Bulgaria, to take over the helm. They have a different perspective. They understand what Russia is about. Mark Rutte, a very long-serving prime minister of Netherlands, I'm sure he knows also what Russia is about. But remember, he was prime minister when the M17 plane was shot down. And he will be asked by those who want to support him to be quite robust on Russia and, more importantly, seriously strong on changing their dimensions and the parameters of NATO.
The White House is in an election mode. That almost explains all these decisions that are being made, not only in Ukraine, but in the Middle East. And we've had a shocking development these last days, and I want to mention it here at the end. The Iran missile and drone attack on Israel. I spoke to my correspondent within these last hours. He took his family to the shelter. And then, because he's a correspondent, he stood on his balcony and waited for the drones and the sirens and the explosions over Jerusalem. Does that change things for Germany? Does that change things for the EU and for NATO? What we saw was the future.
It's unbelievably difficult to answer this question. The Europeans, as the Europeans, are powerless when it comes to influencing Iran. It's the United States, it's Israel's military response, and don't forget the response of the Arab countries that can and should, that are playing a role in stopping this escalation. But this is a very old conflict now that has come to fruition, and Israel is not going to allow itself to be defeated by Iran. And if you read all the reports from the Middle East, Iran may have bitten off more than it could chew. But the point is, the Middle East is an extraordinary phase of turmoil, instability, and unpredictability. And I'm not sure Western powers or Arab powers, or even China and Russia, are prepared for the days and months ahead.
Again, it's the U.S. must lead, or there's not going to be leadership. Is that correct, Judy?
The U.S. has to lead. And it's unfortunate that it's in an election cycle. And this is not about, you know, will this benefit the Biden administration or not for his re-election. But this is extraordinary what it will do for all sorts of issues, for energy, for conflict, for migration, for refugees, for deaths, for escalation, for a bigger conflagration of this conflict. And the United States is in the position, and it has to be in the position to actually pull this back. The problem is that its relations with Iran has been so awful over the last 10 or 12 years that it's going to take an awful lot of persistence and persuasion and diplomatic skills to pull this issue back from the brink.
Judy Dempsey is the Editor-in-Chief of Strategic Europe, Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. She's writing most recently of Olaf Scholz's embassy to Beijing. I'm John Bash.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.